Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... It's only Monday, listener, and it's already been a momentous week. In the early hours of Sunday morning, the Netanyahu family left the Prime Minister's official residence on Balfour Street in Jerusalem after a residency of a dozen years and 1 month after Naftali Bennett was sworn in as Prime Minister. On Sunday, the High Court issued one of the several landmark rulings on its agenda for this week, declaring that a ban on same-sex couples and single men becoming parents through surrogacy was unconstitutional, and ordering the government to lift those restrictions within 6 months. Also on the legal front, last week's High Court ruling on the so-called nation-state law continues to make waves, with opponents arguing that the law enshrines Jewish supremacy and racial segregation as foundational principles of the State of Israel, and supporters saying that it anchors the essence and character of Israel as the nation-state of the Jewish people. In the Knesset, meanwhile, the new ruling coalition, headed by Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid, suffered an embarrassing blow when it failed to get 60 MKs to vote in favour of extending a controversial amendment to the citizenship law, which barred family reunification between Palestinians married to Israeli citizens. Here with me in the studio, diplomatically to ignore the result of last night's football and to discuss the legal, legislative and miscellaneous developments from the past few days, we've got Noah Landau and Michael Hauser-Tov. Hi guys, thanks Hello. For coming in.
Hi Simon, I was just about to ask you about last night, but yeah. Now I understand it's forbidden, so...
It's not forbidden, but we have a heavy finger on the editing.
It's better because I know nothing about football. So
Perfect. That's why Angel isn't in here today. And Ariel David, our resident Italian, won't be in for a while. Guys, shall we start with what I think is unmitigated good news? You'll correct me if I'm wrong. I'm talking about the High Court ruling that a ban on same-sex couples and single men becoming parents via surrogacy is unconstitutional, despite the current government saying that it's not politically feasible at this time to advance a bill to rectify the issue. Given the fragility of the current coalition, is there any chance that this landmark ruling, as the LGBT task force described it, will actually lead to a change in the law?
No, definitely no. And I think that this is what the Minister of Health, Nitzan Horovitz, just said to the Supreme Court, that there is no any chance, there is no any opportunity to change the current law at the Knesset through all the political system. The only way to change the current situation is only through the court, only through the judge that said what they said. So no, there is no any political situation that this law can be changed.
But the court can't pass a law, right?
No, but he can change the situation. He can change the reality. This is what he did, kind of.
It sent it back to the Knesset and gave the Knesset 6 months to annul.
The Supreme Court gave 6 months to the system. I don't know exactly who at the system, but to the system to make the all what it needs to change the situation. But there is no any law that should be passed in the next 6 months. The situation already changed by the judges. They said that the situation changed, and it changed. And now the system got 6 months only to make everything that they need. I don't know exactly what the process about this, but they have time to make everything
and
happen.
And there are none of the more conservative parties in the coalition or in opposition who might try and stick spokes in the wheel to try and stop this happening?
Maybe, but I think it's much, much, much harder to change it back and became it illegal than to change the situation right now and became it legal, because this is a statement to say we decided to choose that gay couple cannot have a child here in Israel. This is a very, very big statement. Because of that, I don't think that there is a situation that we read back to the past about this issue.
So it's a done deal. Someone who I'm quite loath to quote unfortunately made an interesting point in his response to the court ruling, leaving aside his spurious nonsense about how the justices are harming Judaism, self-confessed homophobe and racist Bezalel Smotrich also said that women's organizations will fight the court's decision to allow women's bodies to be sold for surrogacy. Could it be argued that this is gender equality through the exploitation of women, you know, rent a womb sort of thing?
Of course, it could be argued. We don't need to quote Smotrich for that. There are many liberal democracies around the world, such as France, for example, where surrogacy is a very difficult issue because of women's rights. But I don't think that in Israel we'll see feminist organizations fighting this really in a major way. Maybe you'll hear a voice here or there. I think in Israel, gay rights, or if you want, pinkwashing, is pretty much a consensus. It's very mainstream in today's Israel. Although, you know, we do have voices such as Smotrich, but in the end, it is pretty much, I think, in the mainstream today. Mm. So I don't really see civil society fighting this, although there is an interesting point to be made about the fact that, of course, surrogacy has a lot of difficulties when we talk about women's rights. And also, I think in Israel, the problem is that we're not talking about surrogacy in general. We're talking about the rights of straight couples versus gay couples. So this is a question of equality. I personally think that it should be banned for everyone. But if you have a case where for straight couples, this is something, you know, that is that's their right to do this process within Israel, then of course there's a problem of equality if you ask gay people to do that abroad.
Mm. And I think this is the issue about the court, because if you remember, like a year ago, I can't remember the exact date, they passed that lesbian couples of two women can do surrogacy, but gay couples cannot, because of political issue, because of the coalition issues. And the Supreme Court just said this is a situation that we cannot deal with. Mm. The equality between the men and the women must be achieve this kind of things.
Mm, so the court didn't address the issue of surrogacy itself, it just addressed
Definitely.
Discrimination
exactly.
between various
Definitely.
Israeli citizens.
And that this, maybe leads us to the second subject, which is the question of equality and how the court in Israel sees equality. Because if you want to mention your second topic, I'll say why.
Well, thank you, Noah, for that wonderful segue. You can tell you used to work in radio. progressives were happy, generally, with the court surrogacy ruling, but they were safe to say they were left disappointed by the ruling on the nation-state law. So, Noah, just remind us, what is that law? Why is it so controversial?
Right. So the nation-state bill talks about basically emphasizing the values of Israel as a state of the Jewish people above the democratic principles of, and the never-ending discussion about the Jewish and democratic, can a state be Jewish and democratic,
yeah.
And so on. So the nation-state bill comes as backlash, basically, to a process that the court went through in the 90s where liberal values and human rights were emphasized by the courts and not in the actual legislation, because if our listeners still don't know this fact, Israel does not have a constitution.
Right.
So
it has a series of basic laws
exactly.
which form the constitution.
Which allegedly form a sort of a constitution.
Along with the Declaration of Independence, which is kind of a guiding principle, right?
Yes and no. It depends on how the court interprets it. Mm. So the point is, connecting, you know, to the previous issue, that I think the court in Israel usually judges in the end by consensus within society. So with gay rights, it's not very courageous of the court to go with this ruling. While on the nation state bill, they didn't really want to take a chance to actually reverse a basic law, which would get major criticism from the right wing for being too activist as a court and so on. Mm. We know these discussions also from the state. But in the end, the judges had to make a serious intellectual loop to kind of prove that the new law, it doesn't really rule out equality, that equality is still a major value and that the law is symbolic and will not harm it in reality. That's basically what they said.
Because it doesn't have any practical ramifications. It doesn't practically allocate more money to Jewish than to Arab. It's declarative, right?
Because the interpretation of the law will always be judged also in accordance with the value of equality by the courts themselves. So allegedly, in reality, this is more declarative, exactly.
I'm not sure about it, but finish the sentence.
I mean, that's what the court basically said, that equality still exists as a major value, it doesn't erase it, and so in practice, that's what they claimed. I think that they're totally disregarding the fact that equality does not exist in reality. It's totally the opposite situation. And this law is just establishing the fact that equality doesn't exist on the ground.
So when Justice David Mintz said equality isn't a magic word, what did he mean by that?
Well, in the end, in his specific opinion, he was referring to the fact that he thinks that national values still have a major stand also in front of equality. But I think other judges did emphasize, from a liberal point of view, equality, but claimed that the law will not harm that. That's what I think most of the judges in the end tried to claim. And it's also not a coincidence, and we need to emphasize this, that the only judge that actually had a dissenting opinion was the one who is the minority, which this law basically harms.
Right, the one who is most likely to be affected by the passing of
which
the
is
law.
The Arab judge, in case we need to
say
George,
this. Justice George Carroll, let's give him a shout out.
I must say, I don't think that this is only a declaration law, because first of all, one of the courts at the north, the Krayot area, used this law in some case, and I think that one of the most interesting question is going to be about the citizenship bill that the Knesset tried to pass but couldn't last week. And one of the most interesting question is if Ayelet Shaked, the Minister of Internal Affairs, will be able to use the national law to say to the couples, Arab and Jewish couples, that they cannot get the citizenship because of the national law.
Is there a clause in the law that or is it, again, a question of interpretation?
I don't know. This is a question. This is a legal question. I don't know the answer, but this is very, very interesting, and I know that Ayelet Shaked wondering if she is able to do this this kind of movement and use this law.
I mean, Shaked said that she was pleased with the ruling, but at the same time bemoaned the fact that the court even discussed the petitions. First of all, who filed the petitions?
A long line of civil organizations.
Okay.
Civil society.
So as far as she's concerned, this is another battle in the ongoing war over judicial activism.
Yes, but also on the Jewish character of the state versus its democratic values.
And the Supreme Court in this case is stacked 10-1 in favor of the minority, whereas society, as we know, 21% of Israeli citizens.
But it's not
Arab.
Really surprising, Simon, if you look at history, of the Israel Supreme Court and its role in Israel's history. The Supreme Court always kosherized settlements, for example. The Supreme Court always, in the end, this is how I see it, takes the stand of the consensus and the majority. It's true that there were some landmarks rulings that had to do with the protection of minorities, but I think in recent years the right wing criticism about activism in the court really had an effect as well, and they're not willing. This ruling is really interesting because they're trying to say this legislation, just like my colleague Michael mentioned, does not really affect equality. Well, we do see that in reality, like Michael said, it does.
But we must remember one thing. The question that the judges answered this week is about if they should cancel this law or not. Mm. The main point is to cancel. It's not to make this legislation. It's to cancel this kind of legislation. And I think that the judges didn't say if they think that this is a good or bad, this is right or wrong. They said this is not enough to cancel this kind of legislation. And this is a very big difference that we must understand, because they might think that this law, it's not only declaration law. They might think that this law is a very bad law and talking about equality and goes on and goes on. But they don't think that this all enough to cancel, actively cancel this kind of law.
Mm, and that's especially true because it's a basic law.
That
needs a different majority to pass and to be annulled in the Knesset.
61,
right?
More than a half. But the Supreme Court already deal with a basic law just last month, and they did change a basic law. They did talk about basic law. This is a completely different law about the budget and about the time schedule to pass the budget, mm-hmm. but it is a basic law, and the Supreme Court says that some act of the Knesset about the time schedule of the budget passing was illegal. And this is a change of basic law, and the judges discussed about it and cancel this kind of act.
So they can rule on something that's illegal, but not something that they might find immoral.
Exactly. Mm. But this is a very big thing, of course, if they're talking about basic law, if they cancel basic law.
And now you said that they wanted to, the Supreme Court goes with the Israeli consensus. Is there also a sense that they want to kind of shake off the image that the previous prime minister has tried to stick to them of being leftists and liberals and that they're frightened of making any groundbreaking decisions that could be used against them or could be seen as interfering in the political process for one side or the other?
Listen, politics and Supreme Courts in general around the world, it's a delicate issue because, you know, they would, of course, claim that this is strictly legal. This is not about their own image or... But of course, I think it has an effect. It has a chilling effect. And we can see, you know, research also shows that along the years, when there is a specific claim in the political arena, you can also track kind of a trend within the rulings.
Mm. And when,
which is less activist.
Mm, and when public faith in the high court goes down, corresponding to the amount of attacks and the viciousness of the attacks on the justices
from
politicians.
Yes. Yeah. Mm.
So from issue to issue and on the same issue, Michael, I understand you had a bit of an all-nighter, a Laila Levan in the Knesset last week when the annual ritual of renewing a controversial clause in the citizenship law came up. Talk us through what happened. What were they voting on, who voted for, and who voted against?
So this was kind of a test, some people think like that, to the coalition, because the coalition splitted. There are a few parties who historically think this is a bad law. Meretz, it's the first of the party, but parts of the Avoda, the Labour Party, think like that the same, especially MK Ibtissam Arana.
Well, let's just remind our listeners what the law actually is. It's mm-hmm. it's an amendment, a clause in the citizenship law, which bars Israeli citizens, Arab citizens of Israel who have married people from the West
Palestinians from
the West Bank, from living with their spouses inside Israel. They don't have official residency status.
They can actually live in Israel, which is what is happening. There are thousands of couples who actually
15,000.
Live in Israel, but they don't have a status. They don't have legal status and rights
so
that
come with
it.
So they can't work and they can't...
No, they can work, but they
can
have...
work, they can't enjoy benefits, and it specifically in terms of education and health, for example.
Mm. Okay, so this was an amendment that was passed in 2004,
yeah.
Funnily enough, a temporary clause that's been going on for 16 years.
Yeah.
Now, the 17th time it comes up for a vote, what happens?
So Meretz and Ram, the Islamic party at the coalition, wanted to vote against this law. And Bennett, the Prime Minister Bennett, thought that this is a loss that he cannot afford himself to the coalition. So they talked all the night and all the day before how can they pass this law without using the opposition, because the opposition didn't want to give them this women, this winning. At the end of the night, at, I don't know, it was, I think, 8 a.m. in the morning already.
Wow.
It came to vote. And then there is one coalition member called Amichai Shikli. He's the MK from Bennett's party, from Yamina party. Mm. And he is a part of the coalition, but part of from the opposition as well. He's at the middle, let's say, because he voted against this government and he wants to fell the government, but he still play with Bennett and with Yamina party. And he voted against this law after Ram and Meretz and all the parts of the Avodah was satisfied enough to vote for this law, because they got a lot of internal issue that the minister Ayelet Shaked gave to those kind of couples about the civilian life, about some humanitarian and some bureaucratical issues.
But also because they changed the vote to be a vote on the future
exactly.
of the government itself.
So at the end of the process, just before the voting, they changed it to a vote of
confidence
for the government. And then Amichai Shikli, this kind of MK Knesset member, voted against this law. So what happened at the end of the day, the law fell, but the government didn't, because to sway this kind of a voting need a 61 vote members to fall the government, and because they
and
had only
59 was tied at 59,
so exactly
they didn't go to a penalty shootout
exactly
yeah, fortunately. Mm-hmm. So what does this now mean for the 15,000 Palestinians who have applied for Israeli residency?
On principle, they can now request individually, each one of them, a legal status within Israel. And then the state needs to examine each request on its own and not, you know, declare ahead and for everyone that they shouldn't receive the status. So what happens now is that because Ayelet Shaked is the interior minister, she is actually not willing to check every request individually, because she knows then each case can appeal individually to the court and so on. It's a mess for the state, and also they could fail in court. So now there's a legal battle on could they actually file their requests individually?
Actually, at the end of the day, nothing really changed. Nothing really changed, because as Noah said, Ayelet Shaked can decline all the citizenship requests.
Mm. Well, we'll see if the court allows her to.
Yeah, but it's going to take like a year and a half.
Yeah, it's going to be long and ugly.
Very long. And before it will come to the court, the Knesset probably will pass a new bill. They try to build right now a new bill. They try to find some way that all of the coalition member can agree about this kind of a bill, maybe a part of the opposition, but I don't think so. And they will try to pass it at the next few weeks, I don't know, 2-3 weeks.
It's going to be very difficult to reach an understanding.
Very, very difficult.
But you know, Michal, I think that something did change in the end. We have an amendment that has been approved over and over automatically for so many years. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, with this, you know, change in the political landscape, we also finally see a discussion, a very, you know, serious public discussion on, you know, what is this amendment exactly for? Is it democratic? Is there another way to keep Israel safe without harming people's individual rights?
But do you think that this is a real discussion even outside of Haaretz building and outside of the studios?
Yes, I think suddenly people heard even that this amendment even exists, which they didn't before. So, you know, for many of us, it's really easy for Jewish majority in Israel. It's really easy, you know, to live our lives without even knowing all these things. But suddenly, yes, there was a public discussion about it for many weeks. I think this is a change.
I think that the main change is that this is the first time that the government, or I don't know, Yair Lapid, let's say, said this is not a security issue. This is a demographical issue. And this is the main change about this kind of law. I'm not sure that this is a real discussion here in Israel.
Well, this
outside
is part
of the
discussion. For years, we were told that this is for security reasons, and suddenly, you know, we are told actually it's not really the security reasons. So that's part of the discussions that I'm happy that we're finally having.
Mm-hmm. That discussion is a welcome thing. Is there not a concern though that the purity of the discussion will be ruined by the political shenanigans that we saw, you know, where we have staunch right wingers voting against an amendment that they introduced a decade and a half ago, and you have left wingers voting for it. I mean, it felt like a lot of lawmakers were voting with their noses to spite their faces, if I can stretch an analogy
too far. That's true.
You know, does ideology die in a coalition government?
I don't think it dies, because the struggles actually indicate that it doesn't die, because it's a struggle within the coalition. But this amendment
fell by default. It's everybody, it seemed, or the vast majority of the 120 MKs would have been happy to see it passed if it hadn't meant supporting the government and potentially...
Right, but beyond all the cynicism and all the, you said, political shenanigans, in the end, there's also, you know, what actually happened? What actually happened is now an amendment that used to exist for so many years, now doesn't. And suddenly, parties that used to support this now admit, such as Likud, that it's not the end of the world. And it's not really only about security. And we can, you know, re-examine the situation. So, you know, this is beyond all the political shenanigans. This is what's actually happening, which I think is a important process that we should have.
Mm. But of course, that coalition means sacrifice. This is the meaning of coalition, and especially this kind of a coalition. Each side will sacrifice something during those years or months. I don't know how long does it takes to this government. But of course, they will sacrifice.
Mm.
And also, Simon, you know, for so long, the whole political system was all around one person, which
one
is
question,
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah. Probably
against
Bibi.
Everything was exactly for or against Bibi. And now, suddenly, again, we have discussions on the actual matters. So this is something that I think we'll see with other issues, which is... in the end, a positive process.
Mm. I think I kind of agree with Hanin Majadla, who wrote on Haaretz 21 now, saying that none of the MKs actually care about the law or its demographic or security implications.
That's true, but it allows people who do care to emphasize these issues.
Mm. Michael, what does it tell us about the... Sorry, I keep switching between Michael and Michael.
That's, whatever you prefer. So, I will answer both of them.
In the spirit of Israeli nicknamism, Mickey, what does this tell us about the future of the coalition? I mean, especially given the statement by Walid Taha of the mm-hmm. United Arab List, who says that the party won't vote on any Knesset legislation. Does this effectively paralyze the coalition now?
So actually, I will agree with my colleague Yossi Werther, who wrote this Friday, that this law just made the coalition much stronger, because we saw that Trump will sacrifice to survive the coalition, and Meretz wants to sacrifice to make this coalition exist, and Avoda and all of the party, and Yamina and Naftali Bennett sacrificed as well.
Mm.
So this only proved that this coalition wants to be exist. And for this kind of a thing, they will have to work very hard. I think that the first and only test of this coalition will be the budget during November.
Right.
This is not a real test, the citizenship law. This is a moralical issue. This is, I don't know, an embarrassment to the coalition, but this is not a real test. The one and only test will be the budget and how it looks like today. I do think and I do believe that they will be able to pass the budget because of all the members of the coalition. They want to keep it happen. They want to keep this government. And we saw it last week during the voting of the citizenship law.
Mm. And is Bennett going to have to make every Knesset vote a vote of confidence from now on?
No, I don't think so. And this is a very, very, very bad thing and very, very bad trick that he can find. I don't think that he will do it. And it won't be able to happen for a long time if he will chose this kind of a trick during all the voting. I think this was kind of a mistake even because of Amichai Shikli that changed the vote only because of that. So I don't think that this is going to be a system.
Noah, this blurring of the party lines of which Arab parties will vote with the government, which will vote against the coalition in order to spite the government, who will abstain, who will not have anybody to look after their dog one afternoon and won't be able to make it to a vote. This is very much Netanyahu's legacy, isn't it?
I don't know if this is Netanyahu's legacy. It's part of the political system, but
he was the one who stuck his oar into the mud and murkied up those waters.
I do think that Netanyahu's strategy right now as head of opposition is to spite the coalition. So he wants, even not that before ideology was a major consideration for Netanyahu, but now it looks even more cynical. So yes, I think he's leading this, strategy to embarrass the coalition at any price, which indeed, in terms of ideology, makes everything quite confusing.
So, and I don't think that you can say legacy already, because the fact that he's the head of the opposition, yeah, he's not the prime minister, but it is important position. It is an influence position.
Well, it hasn't been with certain leaders of the opposition in recent years, anyway. Listen, at the risk of being accused of burying the lead, I want to end on Balfour Street and the long-awaited relocation of the Netanyahu family. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to mention it for the record. No, actually, I do.
Yes, he is out of Balfour. Yes. For everyone who needed the symbol.
I actually do have one question.
It is now official.
I actually do have one question. Will he be moving back into Balfour ever?
I don't know. I don't know. I have something else to say about Balfour, if it's able to. He left Balfour at 2:44, I think, a.m. At the morning, at the middle of the night, actually. And this is so Netanyahu-cal thing, to move Balfour without anyone will be able to see. There is a crime minister organization, you know, this kind of organization, and they had a lot of people who waited outside there only to catch this picture. And there is a one who catch some kind of a picture about car that's left the gate, and you cannot really see in nothing at this kind of a picture. But how genius Netanyahu is to decide leave Balfour.
Or a coward.
Or a coward, yeah, maybe. To leave Balfour at the middle of the night without anyone will see and without a victory picture. This is so Netanyahu-cal thing.
Well, I hesitate to say like a thief in the night, because I don't know who's litigious amongst our listeners. Guys, I'm afraid we're out of time. Noah, lovely to see you again. Thanks for your time.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael, for your time and your insights too. Our thanks to our producer, Aaron Ehrlich. We'll be back again at the weekend with another episode of, you guessed it, Haaretz Weekend. Until then, cheerio and ciao from Tel Aviv.